Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Episode 248 for the love of the game on the Believe Podcast Network is brought to you by Bet Online. We are here, folks. We are in the thick of it. NCAA tournament. We are on to the Sweet 16, and Bet Online has you covered for all things NCAA tournament. But not just that, we also have the women's bracket. We have NBA down the stretch. They come in the regular season. NHL. Baseball is going to be kicking off, and BetOnline has you covered for all those things and more. Head to BetOnline today and get in on all the action. Remember to use promo code BLEAV, that's B-L-E-A-V, for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. With that said, episode 248 for the love of the game. Let's get this work. Cut the music up. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. Episode 248 for the love of the game on the Bleep Podcast Network with yours truly. It's ATH Aaron Tobinas. We're back in the saddle, back behind the mic on a Tuesday afternoon. We had a wild couple of days, long couple of days in the opening weekend of the NCAA tournament. It obviously never disappoints, even though we had some blowouts specifically in the second round, but we did have some exciting upsets in the first round. Down goes my darling, the Auburn Tigers. The Florida game was, Florida-Colorado was a really exciting ending. So there was definitely good stuff. I mean, the NC State train is still rolling, an 11 seed into the Sweet 16 behind DJ Burns, their big man. Guys built like a refrigerator, but has soft feet, soft touch. They're an 11 seed. They're onto the Sweet 16. So it was a packed weekend of college hoops. Some bad, some good, some ugly, but that's what you get from the NCAA tournament. Just great stuff. So we're obviously going to bring back Jordan Marks to recap the tournament, what our big takeaways were, and what to look forward to going forward. But just a couple of quick things around the sports landscape. We'll start with the NBA really quick. The New York Knicks, who have been beaten and battered and incredibly injured, well, they are marching towards a top three seed in the Eastern Conference. They are holding strong right now, sitting at fourth. They are a half a game behind the Cleveland Cavaliers for third. They're 7-3 in their last 10. And what can you say about that road trip, that four-game road trip where they went 3-1? They beat Sacramento. They beat Golden State. We'll get to them in a little bit. They beat Portland. You're supposed to be Portland. But the big thing is that somebody who I stood on his island, I always said that I wanted Miles Deuce McBride to be playing more minutes. And most recently, and again, circumstances dictate this stuff sometimes, but Deuce McBride has been playing a tremendous amount of minutes. He went from playing basically 5 minutes a game to over 30 minutes a game, and a couple of games where he's been the full 48. And I know a lot of people are complaining about Tom Thibodeau and the minutes allocations. He's playing two guys too many minutes. If there's one guy who you can play all these minutes, it's Deuce McBride, because he's young. He hasn't necessarily played a lot of minutes early. And let's just face it, they need his energy right now. So they need him out there. He's been excellent, averaging about 13 points a game. He's shooting the lights out from three, over 40% after his first 2 years, 25% from three, 29% from three his first 2 years. He's been over 40% from three. Where would the Knicks be without Deuce McBride? It would be a disaster, an absolute disaster. And I've said it multiple times. Deuce McBride, regardless of who's healthy and available, needs to be playing 25 minutes a night. And you know what? I'm going to amend that. He's got to be playing 30 minutes a night. 30 minutes a night for Deuce McBride. He is a bulldog on defense. He's shown a tremendous amount of growth offensively. That guy needs to play. Whether it's with Brunson, whether it's spelling Brunson, whatever it is, that guy needs to be in the lineup. And what else can you say about Josh Hart, who continues to play well? The guy hadn't had a triple-double in his career, has five in the last month. I mean, he's been tremendous. I know he's struggling shooting, but where would the Knicks be without Josh Hart? I know a lot of people are clowning on that extension on Twitter because of his offensive efficiency. But the guy plays winning basketball. He just plays winning basketball, and he's a pleasure to have on this team. This team is so freaking likable. I know I bagged on their trade deadline acquisitions. Bogdanovich, Burks, both are absolutely unplayable. But still, I mean, this team is so likable. McBride, Hartenstein, who's been incredible. DiVincenzo, who just set the franchise record for threes last night against the Detroit Pistons, Brunson. It's just a very likable team. Hopefully they get OG Anunoby back in the playoffs. They get Randall back in the playoffs. We'll see what this Knicks team can do. But my goodness, it is a fun team. But yeah, losing to Denver when Denver's starting lineup is big and the Knicks had to go with Josh Hart at the four was a We knew it was going to be a problem, but kudos to the New York Knicks for the way they're playing. And where would they be without Miles McBride and Isaiah Hartenstein, who I've said forever was the better player out of between him and Mitchell Robinson, and I've been validated and proven correct once again. One last thing of note in the NBA, and we're going to get to some bigger sports topics in a second, but a couple of days ago, we thought that the playoff teams, specifically the teams in both conferences, the 10, were pretty much set. Obviously, there was going to be some rejiggling in terms of seeding, who's going to be in the play-in tournament, but we thought we had our 10 teams. In the East, that is for sure the case. But in the West, the Golden State Warriors right now sit at 36-34. And the Houston Rockets, who we thought were dead in this playoff race, are coming on strong because they've won 9 straight games and they are 36-35, a half a game behind the Golden State Warriors. Jalen Green, after Alperen Sengun went out with an injury, and yeah, Sengun is still their best player. Jalen Green has been much maligned, but he's been absolutely crazy lately, like a true shooting percentage of 64%. Nuts, averaging 28 points a game. The only guys who are doing it with a better true shooting are Giannis, Jokic, and LeBron. I mean, it's absolutely wild. But the Golden State Warriors really need to get their act together. 4-6 in their last 10. Steph Curry has struggled shooting the ball for his standards. And let's just face it, this team, it's not that far away from winning a title. It was only 2 years ago. They've gotten great contributions from some of their young guys. Kuminga's taken a step up. Brandon Pajemski's been a nice find. Trace Jackson Davis has been a nice find, but they're still only two games over 500 with Stephen Curry having largely a really awesome season. So something's really wrong here and they got to figure it out. And it's a very expensive roster for them to barely be a play-in tournament team and for them not to potentially not even make the play-in tournament. So we're going to see what happens with Golden State. I'm hoping to talk to somebody who's a Golden State Warriors fan next week to see where they're at, but it's not looking good in Golden State. Obviously, the big story in sports right now is professional athletes and their linking to gambling. We had the Shohei Ohtani news that his interpreter basically stole $4.5 million from Ohtani to cover his gambling debts. Now, it was rumored that Ohtani was actually betting on games. Now, it wasn't talked about whether he was betting on baseball or not. It was assumed that he was not, but more details to come. And then you have the even worse news. DeJounte Porter, brother of Michael Porter Jr., was caught basically suppressing his, there were irregularities with his prop bets, and that there were games where he was, you know, openly telling people to bet the under on his props, and he mysteriously checked out of a game with an injury. There was some weirdness there. I mean, that's even worse, because that's basically saying that you're not even betting on yourself. You're betting against yourself. You're betting against your team. And the NBA, when all the facts come out and all the details come out, they have to drop the hammer on him and basically ban him for life, because that is inexcusable. You just can't have this. Professional sports are in a weird time when it comes to betting. They've embraced it. They've taken a lot of money from the gambling companies, and this was going to happen. Obviously, you saw a couple of suspensions already in the NFL. I mean, Jameson Williams got suspended for putting in a college football parlay on the grounds of the training facility, which got him six games. Calvin Ridley got a season for this. I mean, it's uncharted waters for professional sports when it comes to reconciling the gambling. And if we're being quite frank, it's kind of hypocritical, because every other ad, whether it's TV commercials or plastered, you know, billboards all over the stadiums, is DraftKings, FanDuel, Bet365, you name it. It's all over the place. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Nothing's going to happen to Shohei Ohtani. Let's face it, Major League Baseball can't afford that. DeJounte Porter, I really think the NBA is going to have to ban him. And the NBA is lucky that it wasn't a more marquee player. I mean, DeJounte Porter is a two-way guy. He's hanging on for his career. Like, he's not a high-profile guy. This was a high-profile guy for the NBA. The NBA would have a major, major problem. So details are still to come with these stories. I'm curious to see what happens. But anyway, that's just a quick roundup in sports. We're going to bring back on Jordan Marks to recap the opening weekend of the tournament, what we noticed, our big takeaways, what we can expect for the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, and we can get to him in just a matter of moments. So, had to have him back. Opening weekend of the NCAA tournament is in the books. We had some craziness. We had a lot of blowouts, but there was a lot of interesting stuff going on. So, Jordan Marks is back. Jordan, what's good, buddy? How you doing?
Good, good. Still trying to catch some sleep. This gets a lot harder when you start having kids, I got to tell you.
I don't envy your position, considering I am not in that position just yet. And I had a hard time staying awake, and I fell victim to my bed and falling asleep, missed the end of the Houston Texas A&M game, which was fantastic. One of the really good games of the weekend, which had a couple, but, you know, not as crazy as we thought. But okay, so before that, congratulations to the Michigan Wolverines for naming a new coach. How you feel?
I feel amazing. I mean, to get Dusty May when it seemed as though that same day he was about to ink on the dotted line for Louisville, a program which I think devotes more resources and has basketball as A1. Really awesome. And yeah, I mean, 47-year-old, like, brought a program that essentially was zilch to a Final Four. Those guys seem to have good track records when you look at Shaka, Larrañaga, and so on. So, yeah, I'm excited for Dusty to hit the ground running. It's going to be a full reset. So we'll see.
So obviously we want to recap the opening weekend of the tournament. What was your one big takeaway? One big takeaway from what happened this past weekend?
Oh, big takeaway. Yeah, for me, it's just the power conferences came to play. I mean, you know, 14 of your Sweet 16 teams come from power conferences, and the other two, Gonzaga and San Diego State, are absolutely no slouches. Those are essentially blue bloods this day and age. So, yeah, there's no Cinderella teams, and it might have made for, like, some, as you said earlier at the jump, some less exciting games, some non-contests. But boy, I think we're in for a hell of a second weekend.
I mean, I think the ACC, obviously, a conference that was, you know, rumored to maybe have two teams at one point. Obviously, Virginia was an embarrassment in the first four games on Wednesday night, where they scored under 50 points. I mean, they were a disaster. But Duke is still alive. North Carolina looks like it is either 1A or 1B in terms of teams that can win the whole thing. And
NC State and Clemson.
NC State has won seven games in 12 days. Clemson,
remarkable.
Clemson beat Baylor, which, you know, the Big 12 was considered the best conference in the country this year, and Clemson took care of them. So the ACC that was considered down really really stood out. I mean, the one thing that stood out to me, I guess, kind of piggybacking off that, is just Carolina looks like, I know UConn's getting all the press clippings in terms of how impressive they've been, but I really think this Carolina team can win the whole thing. And like legitimately win the whole thing. I know UConn was a heavy favorite. Our guy, Dave Portnoy, put a monster future on UConn to win the whole thing. But I really think Carolina could win. I mean, they had that crazy graphic that Carolina's average age is the same average age as the Oklahoma City Thunder, which is pretty wild. But that's a veteran team of guys that have been there, and their second round matchup against Michigan State, and Tom Izzo was doing Tom Izzo things in the month of March, where his teams were playing above their level. Magically, somehow they play above their level around this time. But that game flipped like crazy.
Yeah.
And they just look very impressive. And it's a team that a lot of the guys have been there before together. And even the transfer guys have been around the block for a while. And I really think they can win the whole thing. I think the winner of that game in the Final Four is going to win the title.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that they can definitely win the whole thing. That game against Michigan State was awfully impressive. Like, everyone knows that Carolina is a great offensive team, but the way they defended was amazing. I think Seth Trimble is a guy for next year that I think everyone's going to have to know. He's definitely going to be one of those top 25, top 30 players in the country.
And then shots changed the whole tenor of that game.
Absolutely. I think, like, yeah, you talk about Baycott and RJ as being like all tournament guys for sure. Absolutely. They're awesome. But a guy like Seth Trimble, and then, you know, we thought, like, hey, North Carolina's gonna have to bring in a lot of talent because last year's team was bad. But they also still have the core of this team. So they brought in Harrison Ingram and they brought in Cormac Ryan, two players from absolutely losing programs. And what's that gonna look like when you have to go to a blue blood and compete for a national championship? And they've also, Harrison Ingram's been amazing. And Cormac Ryan's hit some really big shots. Some really big,
he hasn't moments. Really shot it well for the most part, though. Like, they're going to need him to shoot it a little bit better. But
totally, totally. I mean, yeah, he came in, you know, a 40% three-point shooter. He's probably down to the low 30s. But at the same time, he definitely adds a component that they're going to need in this next weekend.
So a lot was made after Selection Sunday. The Big East, which was considered one of the best conferences in the country, didn't get as many teams as we thought they should. The ACC, which people consensusly thought it had a down year, but it's still the ACC. Pitt was on the bubble. They didn't necessarily get in. And the Mountain West, which was everybody's darling, got six teams. and none of those teams are left. So was this weekend a referendum on the committee and just how they, you know, put together this this bracket? Like, what do we make of this?
Yeah, I don't like to make big referendums about the committees and the way that they matched up games. I mean, you can't say that those Mountain West teams didn't deserve to be there. I mean, you know, half of the teams made it through to the round of 32. And yeah, it's unfortunate that, you know, they were seeded the way they were. It sucks for Utah State that they had to, or they played against Purdue, right? So yeah, I mean, that sucks. What are you going to do? But at the same time, like, you know, the committee following the net, 12 of the top 14 teams in the net are still alive. They have KenPom on the committee selection seat. 13 of the top 14 teams on KenPom are still alive. I mean, it's, you know, to make any big referendum about any like sort of matchups is what it is. What I do think is, like, people have been throwing out ideas, not people, networks, of expanding the field. I don't think that's a good idea.
So Ryan Russillo talks about this all the time, that expansion, that more doesn't necessarily mean better, because you want it to have some type of exclusivity.
Exactly. And, you know, if you eliminate auto bids for some smaller conferences and add more like mid-tier teams on the power conferences, you're watering down the product. And to me, like, I still think we're going to be where we are today if that were to happen. So, yes, the story about Jack Kolke in Oakland is amazing. Yes, the story about Yale's unbelievable win is amazing. And the stories we've had from year after year about these Cinderella teams. And yes, some of them do go further into the second weekend, and some of them do make the Final Four. Unlikely. But bottom line is, those stories are great, but eventually the best teams who are going to have the most consistent play over day after day of this contest are going to turn out to make it through. So
obviously NC State is the big winner of the first weekend. If you had to pick the second big winner, who would it be?
Since we already touched upon like the ACC and the Big East, those are obviously big winners. I do think, like, you know, Purdue is a big winner and UConn is a big winner. I mean, Purdue, most importantly, had a lot of pressure on them.
Yep.
And, you know, for them to do what they did, just absolutely leaving no question. I mean, they pummeled Utah State, the Mountain West champion. I mean, that game was not even close. And honestly, Zach Edey sat for a lot of that game. So, you know, it doesn't matter. Purdue has a ton of pressure on them. They need to make a Final Four. I mean, they cannot lose to Gonzaga this weekend. And they really need to win both games. So I think that they're definitely a winner. But for me, it's NC State, absolutely. Totally remarkable. What DJ Burns and that squad is doing is crazy. But then, yeah, it's the Big East for sure. I mean, the Big East had these opportunities and you know, they pulled through and really, you know, Marquette, amazing. Tyler Kolek, we talked about his oblique injury last week as something of being a question. He's awesome. He's been amazing. No question about
40
it.
40 points, 20 assists in the first two games. Like, yeah. I mean.
Absolutely.
Pretty good.
Creighton, another awesome. I mean, that game was amazing, but they persevered. They're totally explosive on offense. I think that game, that's definitely the one that I'm probably most looking forward to. It's not one of the top three.
Yeah. To me, the other big winner is Gonzaga. And I know Gonzaga has been a prime program and they haven't won the whole thing and they've been in the mix, but Mark Few's been to 9 straight Sweet 16s. Like, 9 straight. That's hard.
It's really hard.
Really hard. So I know they've gotten, they've elevated in the discourse when it comes to talking about, you know, major programs in college basketball, but like, they to me are a big winner.
Yeah. I mean, they were picked as a prime suspect to be upset in the first round by McNeese. Like, everybody and their mother was picking McNeese. And then they were fortunate to definitely have a, you know, a depleted Kansas squad missing Kevin McCullough.
They smoked them.
But they left no question in either of those games. Those games were not even close. And even if they're a depleted Kansas squad, it's still Kansas and Bill Self, right? That game was not even as close as the final score. So, yeah, Gonzaga definitely a winner. And this Gonzaga Purdue game is going to be fun.
That's going to be a really, really fun one. The big loser, obviously, is the Kentucky Wildcats.
Ooh.
And the SEC as a whole. But the Kentucky Wildcats are the big loser. Coach Cal hasn't won more than one tournament game in 5 years. And he talks about in the press conference that, you know, his big success is getting guys to the next level. And if you look, I mean, you can't argue that. You know, we don't have to name the names, Towns, Booker, like there's, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, plenty. But the fan base doesn't want to hear about any of that, right? Because they just look at it and be like, you had all these guys and you haven't won squadouche. Like, where does Kentucky go from here? He has a monster buyout, but like, what do you do if you're Kentucky? Like, what would you do if you were the AD?
This is a second, but when this podcast comes out, we might hear something. So, but for right now, on Tuesday afternoon, if I'm the AD, I'm going to Cal and I'm saying this has to be a mutual breakup. This is not good for anyone. This is not good for anyone. The fan base is as passionate as it gets in global sport, and they don't want him there. It's going to be hard for him to do his job. At this point, it's not working. Let's have a mutual, you know, departure from one another. I think there's no other way to proceed. Now, if I'm Kentucky, I'm like, how am I going to really do better than Cal? Like, he's the best. He recruits at such a high level. Granted,
you're going to have two top 10 picks. Dillingham and Shepherd are going to be top 10 picks in the draft.
Two top 10. I mean, like I said last week, it looks like there's seven players from Kentucky going in the two rounds of the NBA draft. That's insane. I mean, I don't know if that'll actually come to fruition, but the fact that that's even the fact that there's even four, right? But yeah, I think just a mutual departure from one another. Like this can't go on, and it's not they need to just start anew, and they can aim big. You know, when you talk about Michigan or Louisville trying to aim at some of these, you know, Colorado State, Drake, FAU. When you're Kentucky, you can aim higher. You can call Jay Wright. You can call Billy Donovan. You can call Scott Drew from Baylor. I mean, you can make some big phone calls. And I think they should. And I don't know if they will, because from what I'm hearing, it seems like they're going to just keep going and chugging this thing along. Doesn't seem like he's going to change the way the program's structured, though.
So that brings me to my next point. We talked about it last week, but the nature of college basketball has changed, right? And you saw it, and you've seen it with this Kentucky program, that obviously the one and done was a monster thing. Cal really, you know, revolutionized that type of recruiting. Coach K, you know, kind of took the mantle with that as well before he bowed out and retired. But now with the transfer portal, now with NIL, And just recently, we saw that the G League Ignite, that team in the G League is no longer, that guys are going to be sticking around longer because they can make dollars in college basketball. So are you just said that the program is going to stay the same, but do you think, and obviously Coach Cal, because he's been a one-and-done guy and he's prided himself on that, but do you think him and college basketball as a whole is going to change the way they recruit, that they're going to be looking for more 2 to 3 year guys just so they have a better chance to win, because the continuity clearly matters now?
Yeah. I mean, I you would think he would have to readjust if he's sticking around, right? Like there's no, he cannot just do this forever. At the same time, like, are you going to say, you're going to say no to Reed Shepherd and Rob Dillingham? Like, who the hell, no one in their right minds would. That's insane. but they do require to be the star player. So yes, you could bring in an Antonio Reeves who's going to be there for a couple years. You can convince Oscar Tshiebwe to stay for a second year last year, but I at the same time, like, I don't know how you are the number one attraction, right? You're Cal. You have all the NIL at your disposal. Like, no program in their right mind is going to say no to these guys. So, like, I don't know where you go, but what I think you have to do is you have to instill a culture that we're going to play team basketball, right? Like, when you watch Kentucky, they don't look like UConn, right? UConn had four NBA players too last year, right? They don't look anything alike. And that's just what you don't have to have the stats to become a lottery pick, right?
We've seen it.
We watched Cody Williams this week, right? The guy's apparently a top five pick. Does he look like it? I don't think so. So why do they have to play individual basketball like it is an NBA team when it's so clearly not that when it comes to March?
Why is Dan Hurley so mad at the world?
Why is Dan Hurley so mad at the world?
Why is he so mad? By the way, shout out to the rest of the SEC because we were high on Florida. They lost day one. We were both high on Auburn. And our guy, Bruce Pearl, that we love Bruce Pearl, he's a member of the tribe, proud member of the tribe. He lost day one, which was really disappointing. But anyway, back to Dan Hurley. Why is Dan Hurley so mad?
I think that Dan Hurley is so mad. I don't know. For me, Dan Hurley, that's like just part of who Dan Hurley is. He thinks that he wants his team to like feed off his like hunger and like for another championship, like the job's not done or something. I just, you know, like he thinks that these guys are that he's at somehow at a disadvantage and the Big East was seen as being a disadvantage. Which, listen, I don't know if you're telling me if Providence and St. John's and Villanova got into this field, would anything have been different? I don't know. I doubt it. That's still winning two basketball games in this first weekend is really difficult. I don't know if and like we're saying about the Net and Kempom, I don't know if those teams would still be here. They're significantly lower in both those rating systems. So who knows?
The funny thing is that there have been years, and you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but there have been years where we feel like the mid-major has gotten screwed, right? And then there have been years where it's like the Power Five's gotten screwed. And I guess if you were to bring any, you know, conclusions, you should probably err on the side of the Power Five just because, like, you know, their scheduling is such a difference. I was listening to our guy JJ on New York, New York, and he was talking to the coach from Pitt, and he's like, look at, you know, we talk about the ACC being down, but like, look at our first six games in the ACC. It was like North Carolina, we had Duke twice. Both those teams were top 10, right? Carolina was top three at the time. Then you had Virginia, which say what you want about them, they finished third in the conference. Like, we start out 1-5 and you want to know why, like that's what it is. Cause these are the guys we're playing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any sympathy for coaches who schedule lightly. But at the same time, if you're in those conferences, why not? Especially if you have like a young roster, you know, Pitt, I don't know the intricacies of their entire roster, but you want to ease into it. At Thanksgiving, everyone in those conferences are going to play a big tournament. And you might luck out. Pitt played Florida and Oregon State and Missouri. Florida and Oregon State in their tournament. Who knows? Florida ended up being good. They lost. But Missouri, like, I mean, Oregon State, how would they know? So it's not like it's all such a crapshoot. I, you know, when you're a team like Gonzaga, then I have no sympathy for you, right? You better schedule difficult if you want an at-large bid.
Because you need that boost.
All those Mountain West teams, same thing, right? Like, you need that. If you're a Dayton, a VCU, you better schedule. But, like, if you're, like, a McNeese or a Samford or a Colgate, just win your games, right? Yeah. And if you lose three, it is what it is. But you got to win your conference tournament because it's such a bigger talent. disparity. So.
What's your favorite matchup? Sweet 16 matchup. What's the one game you are looking forward to the most this coming weekend? Obviously, we can't predict the Elite Eight because Sweet 16 hasn't started yet, but what's your favorite matchup right now?
I have like two that I'm like really looking forward to. I mentioned Creighton, Tennessee, but you know, UConn is where they are and Marquette is where they are. And I think Creighton here, it has a big torch to carry for the Big East against the big bad of the SEC this year. Right. And then to me, I just watching Creighton, their offense is so explosive this year between Baylor Shireman and Trey Alexander and then Ryan Kalkbrenner down low. I think that's going to be so interesting to watch the defensive intensity of a team like Tennessee and Dalton Knecht, who hasn't been that great thus far. To play, like to have those two, I think that's going to be an awesome game. And then the other one I highlight for me is it's shadily the number one defense versus the number one offense is Illinois and Iowa State. I'm really excited for that one. You know, everyone knows about like the pressure that TJ Otzelberger Cyclones like are. It's insane. They make life a living hell for opposing offenses. They've been great thus far. And I just think like a team like Illinois who has all five guys, except for when they play Dane Danger, the backup big, can shoot the three. And then Terrence Shannon, who's going to be a first-round pick, I believe, is just lethal in transition. He's also been outstanding from distance. So I think that's going to be an awesome game. But I mean, these games are all awesome. I don't know. What about you?
To me, it's got to be NC State Marquette. To win seven games in 12 days, like, you have to see if it's going to continue. The big man is awesome. He was just on Part of My Take. I'm forgetting his name right now. The
DJ lefty Burns. Man. Yeah.
DJ Burns. Like, he's awesome. You know, they've got, you know, one guard who's potentially on the NBA, you know, radar. And you just want to see it continue. They're an 11 seed. Like, to me, that's like the most – I don't want to say must-see TV because it's the Sweet 16, but just the arc of the double-digit seed going to the potentially Elite Eight and having this run where they needed to win their conference tournament to get in. Like, this is just an awesome run. Like, seven wins in 12 days.
Yeah, I mean, they did get the benefit of playing Oakland, which took them to OT, but I do think I totally. I mean, listen, no, they beat Duke and North Carolina 2 weeks ago, so it's not like
right. Nothing. Yeah, both those teams are still alive.
I know, so it's not nothing. I mean, that's going to be, it's definitely going to be fun. We'll see. I mean, Marquette, it's going to be a tall order for sure. But if they do it, it'll be great. I mean, we get the national championship rematch too at UConn San Diego State. So I know everyone's like, you know, UConn's going to win every game by double digits, but you know, that's definitely one to look at again. So
we'll let you go on this one. All number one seeds are still alive. Which number one seed is most vulnerable this weekend and why?
Oh, I mean, I got to say Houston. I mean, that game against Texas A&M where they looked depleted, not only from foul trouble, but from just being fully like healthy and go. They're coming up against a Duke team that I know you said UNC is 1A, but Duke looks like a one seed to me right now. I mean, they are firing on all cylinders. So explosive. I just, you know, I could also see Houston just hampering down and making life a living hell for Jared McCain and Kyle Klobowski, but we'll see. I mean, that one, I to me, that's the most vulnerable team. Yeah.
I just think they've been the least impressive, you know, by a considerable margin of the others. I mean, if I had to pick another one, just because, you know, not to agree with you and just go chalk, I'd probably say Purdue just because of Purdue's demons. But like, Purdue has at least put a walloping on teams. Like, Houston hasn't looked as crisp. And it's interesting considering that they were probably the second overall team, you know, ranked coming into this league, or I should say into this tournament, considering the league that they played in and the record that they had. But I don't think they've been as impressive as the other three one seeds by a decent margin.
Absolutely. This is going to be awesome because no matter what, Thursday and Friday is going to lead to some incredible games on Saturday and Sunday. And then obviously the weekend after in Phoenix is going to be great. So can't wait.
And we saw last year was wild. I mean, we had a 4, a 7, an 8, and I forget what the other final four seeds were. And this year we have,
it was a 10. I think Miami was a 10.
Yeah. Something like that. Something crazy. And then this year, you know, all the one seeds have advanced. You know, most of the two seeds have advanced, and
just all the six seeds.
Yeah, it's just all the six seeds. So it just shows you that year to year, there is absolutely no science behind any of it. But that's why we love it. Anyway, Jordan, thanks for hopping on last minute to recap the tournament. Obviously, we'll probably reconvene next week to talk about the Final Four. But always a pleasure, bud. Thanks so much for doing it.
Absolutely. Take care.
Later. Thanks again to one of my favorite guests, Jordan Marks, recurring guest, for coming on, talking all things NCAA tournament opening weekend. Great stuff from him. We did it on a whim. We did it quickly. No notes. I think it was fantastic. That's episode 248. For the love of the game, take us out, Jeezy. You think you ballin' cause you got a fly. He think he ballin' cause he got a fly.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.